Hi, and welcome to the Dr. Z and J-Dub podcast. I'm J.W. Stewart, a veteran broadcaster and journalist with nearly 30 years' experience. I've worked at ESPN and NBC, and now I teach at the University of New Haven.
And I'm Cheyenne Zenger, Director of Athletics at the University of New Haven, previously the same position at the University of Kansas and Illinois State University. Prior to that, I spent many years in athletic administration and just as many years coaching college football. Welcome to the Dr. Z and J-Dub podcast.
Hi again, everybody, and welcome to the Dr. Z and J-Dub podcast. Thank you for joining us today across all of our social media channels. As always, our podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. Today, our guest is Mario Gabbari, who is our interim provost and also our senior VP for academic affairs at the University of New Haven. Mario's done a lot for our school. We'll talk about that, and he's in the green room right now. We'll bring him out in a few minutes. But first, we say hi to Dr. Z, and how you doing today, Dr. Z?
Doing well. It's been a beautiful week in West Haven, and a little rain this morning. It just cleared up, and got a picture from my oldest son, who's heading back to Kansas City, and he's spent his last couple hours down on the beach eating provenzanos and just sent the family a picture. So, again, I know I talk about it every week, but you just can't get enough of either the food or the beach here in West Haven.
Yeah, you were saying as we were getting ready to come on the air here that he had the beach to himself. Is that right?
Yeah, he says he's all alone down there. He's in the middle of studying for his CPA exam, and it's one of the reasons he came back here to study for 3 weeks was, you know, when he takes a break, he just heads down there and takes a chair. And I had gotten him some provenzanos earlier in the day and left it in the fridge. And he, you know, we've all got our favorite sandwich there, and he loves the true Italian sub. And I mixed it up for him today, though. I got half hot and half sweet. So for those who know what that's like, all about, he was just enjoying the heck out of that.
Yep. That's a good memory to take back with him as he gets ready to head back to Kansas City. That's for sure.
That's right. That's right.
We are recording this podcast on September 10th. It's a Thursday, and I say that because the NFL season, the 2020 season, kicks off tonight. And of course, as we've learned on this podcast, Dr. Z is a huge Chiefs fan, has been for a long time. And the Chiefs kick off the season tonight. They're at home as the Super Bowl champs. They'll raise the banner. They host the Houston Texans tonight. Dr. Z, how excited are you for tonight?
You know, I've spent my life as an athlete or a coach or an AD, and so I view myself as kind of tempering emotion about certain sporting events. But, you know, J-Dub, I can tell you where I was the first time the Chiefs won a Super Bowl. I was being told to get out of the way of the TV by my dad and brother and friends, a black and white TV, you know, and 50 years later, I was down here in West Haven with the McGees, who everyone's met on this show, and John and some other Chiefs fans. The McGees spent time in Kansas City. And, you know, to be there, that was so memorable in part, too, because it was really the last memorable sporting event before everyone was sent home in the world for the pandemic. And so to be able to watch the Chiefs win that championship, hoist the banner tonight, and see them play again. You know, we all thought back in March, heck, we'll be playing again in a couple of weeks. That hadn't been the case. So for them to be playing again, of all the athletic events that have kind of gone on, whether it be NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, whatever, this summer, this one for me signals really a rebirth and a fact that I do think we've got our shoulder pads down as a country, and we're going to make it through this thing.
It's a great use of a metaphor. I would agree with you 100%. I think it's been strange, especially with Labor Day weekend having just come and gone, that we didn't have a lot of college football. There were a few games here and there. You know, a lot of conferences, as we know, are not playing. But I agree with you. I think the fact that the NFL is back, and hopefully, again, fingers crossed, that they can put their shoulder pads down too and make it through the season, because the Chiefs will actually have fans in the stands tonight, which is something we have not seen really for almost any sporting event, certainly not a major sporting event.
Yeah, and we need them to do well. We need our brothers and sisters in the world of the Power Five that are choosing to play to have success. We need the NFL to have success, because if they can do it, that paves the way for us this spring and going forward. I don't know. There's just something about this for me that shows our resilience. And I'm a very non-political guy, very middle of the road, neutral. So I really don't care which party's doing what. I just want to play football. And we can't do that where we're at right now. We have some things that don't allow for that in terms of resources, et cetera, in our niche right now. But we're going to do everything we can. And with the help of President Kaplan, you know, the Chargers need to know no one pushed harder for the ability to play than him and for the ability to play this spring. And I'm not just talking about football. I'm talking about all our fall sports and our winter sports and our spring sports. And so we keep committing to that. We keep pushing for that. And somehow this game for me is a symbol of all of that. And just the, you know, heck, I've great memories with the Chiefs growing up. And I went through a long time, folks, of the Chiefs not having winning seasons. So this is not a bandwagon experience whatsoever. This is, you know, I used to, it's back to the Len Dawsons and Jan Stenerud and those kind of guys that you know, Willie Lanier and Gary Spaney, who's a good personal friend. You know, these are names most folks around here probably don't recognize. But, you know, to top that off for the Patriot fans, I'm also I've always liked the Patriots. I know that doesn't sound right, but I have. And huge Tom Brady fan and we'll be cheering for the Bucks because of that. This fall as well.
It's going to be a strange weekend for me and Patriots fans like myself. I'm excited to have football back, but you know, we've seen Brady, we've seen pictures of Brady and we've seen video of him practicing. Obviously there's no preseason this year, but to see him suit up in a Bucs uniform on Sunday against the Saints, I think that's when it finally, it's 99% soaked in. I mean, that'll be 100% soaked in where it's like, wow, you know, that's bizarre. He's gone and he's on to the final chapters of his life or his playing career with the Bucs, that's for sure. You know, he'll play two seasons. That's what the contract is. Maybe he gets a third in there, but who knows. But for Patriots fans, I think it's going to be bizarre. I mean, I'll tune in and I'm sure I'll be torn, Dr. Z, to be honest with you. I'm grateful. You know, that Brady did everything he did for us. I know when we bring Mario out, Mario has become a Patriots fan because of his wife and that side of her family. So, you know, we appreciate what Brady did for us, the six Super Bowls, and I wish him well. I know there's some Patriots fans that are like, well, you know, you're a traitor and this and that. I don't look at it that way. I look at it as, look, you're allowed to go and do what you want in this country, and, you know, the Patriots and he could not come to an agreement. So I wish him well. I don't know if the Bucs will win a Super Bowl with him in the couple of years he's there, but I will root for him. Just as you just said, I will root for him as well coming up on Sunday, even though it'll be really weird to see him in that uniform.
You know, at the same time, and I say this being a Chiefs fan, not a diehard Patriots fan, but I appreciate football. So I think Bill Belichick's one of the greatest coaches who's ever, you know, walked the sidelines. And so I'm interested to watch him. My oldest son and I were talking about this last night, to watch him in action this fall with Cam Newton as his quarterback and watching what he does there. That'll be really fascinating. So I'm watching both, cheering for both, you know?
Yep. I agree. I've not had a chance to ask you this. I wanted to ask you this before we bring Mario out, but you've spent so much time, you know, playing football. You coached at the college level. Are you more of a college football fan or a pro football fan?
No, I'm a college football guy. I'm a college, always have been. I enjoy the NFL. I enjoy pro sports, but all my focus is on college. And if push came to shove, I would go from college to high school. And I've done that several times in my life. I love the spontaneity of what young people do on the field. And I'm an educator at heart. So when you get to the pro level, it's pure entertainment. You know, and it for me, it's, you know, to me, football and sports at the college level are a celebration of the college culture of that institution. It's the pageantry of the college. It's kind of back to the knights in shining armor with the flags and the tents and the color and the band. You know, that's what college game day, the hot dogs and the band and the, you know, every once in a while, the waft of the cigarette smoke. I'm not a smoker. It just makes game day, you know, what it is. I can wax pretty sentimental quickly on that. So it's all college for me, J-Dub.
I've not been to Arrowhead Stadium, Dr. Z, but I'm told that's the closest in the NFL that we have to a college football atmosphere. Is that true?
You took the words absolutely in every way, except for the band. And sometimes they bring in college bands. And so the tailgating, the lines, the It's a special place. You know, I would say, just from my own experience, before, if people are huge sports fans, you got to go to a Notre Dame football game, a Chiefs game, a Blackhawks hockey game in Chicago. It's crazy in there. A Kansas basketball game in Allen Fieldhouse, or a Duke basketball game in whatever that, you know, arena is called. I say that tongue in cheek. Certain place you got Wrigley Field, Fenway Park. Mario, I'm going to throw this at, you know, Yankee Stadium. There are just certain places you got to go. And those are the ones on my checklist.
Our executive producer, John Mays, just hit me up here on our chat feature here on Zoom, saying he thinks that Lambeau Field is more collegiate. I've not been to Lambeau, so I can't say one or the other. But I don't know many people that have said that Lambeau is more of a college field than Arrowhead. Arrowhead always seems to get that consideration.
Can you fire your executive producer?
I can't. You might be able to.
Hey, the reality of it is, I think Lambeau's pretty special. So he might have a point there. You know, heck, John might be part owner of the Packers, because you can't, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. There's a lot of cool stuff at Lambeau.
Hey, go ahead.
You got to be a real player to play there. I mean, there's some cold days in Lambeau Field. Hey, there's some cold winds in Kansas City, but there's nothing like Green Bay.
Yeah. To be a fan or a player, yeah, or anyone, a referee, anyone on the sidelines, to be in that, yeah, stadium, right, when fans are allowed, it yeah, takes something special. Like January, a playoff game, Lambeau Field, right? That's the, yeah, frozen tundra, right? We've always, yeah, heard that. And one of our, you know, guests earlier, you know, back in May, Chris Berman, he always says that in the highlights, right? Let's go to the frozen, yeah, tundra. Yeah. And, I don't think I could hack that. I don't think I'm that tough to sit there and watch a January game in Lambeau Field, Dr. Z.
Oh, man.
Good. I like my climate-controlled environment, please.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of college field, we wanted to let our alums know about the upcoming Centennial Ball, which, of course, is going to be held virtually this year. It'll be the weekend of Saturday, October the 3rd. And we encourage all of our alumni to please register. The price to register this year is very reasonable. It's just $25, and it promises to be a memorable evening of student showcases, entertainment, a live auction. We have much more planned. We'll have more information for you as leading up to it here on the podcast, in addition to our New Haven website. But your support through the Centennial Ball will help get us closer to meeting and hopefully even succeeding our goal of $120 million. That's for the Charger Challenge goal, which is very ambitious. But that's part of our overall campaign for the University of New Haven. So for more information on how to register or about the ball or to donate, please go to our website, newhaven.edu/alumni. Our guest today is Mario Gabbary, and Mario is the interim provost and senior VP for academic affairs at UNH. He's done a lot of things for our school. He was also the dean of the Henry C. Lee College of Criminal Justice and Forensic Sciences. Earlier in his career, Mario was the deputy director of the Office for Victims of Crime of the U.S. Department of Justice. Mario has a master's degree, a PhD, and a law degree. So, Dr. Z, easily, he's the smartest guy in the podcast right now. And hey, Mario, welcome to the show.
I don't think you even had to say that. People would figure that out pretty quick.
I'm not sure that's true, but I'll take the compliment as we move into the interview.
Well, Mario, we have to apologize for getting so carried away on football there.
That's okay. I like football.
It all came gushing out, you know, that I think we've all been waiting, you know. Yeah. Well, there's something about football in America, and I certainly still think baseball is America's game or pastime. But let's face it, football has more followers, the NFL, et cetera. And it's kind of a way for our nation to put a stake in the ground and say we're back, you know.
Yeah. I agree.
Mario, you are a football fan. Tell us about who you tell us about where you grew up and who you were rooting for growing up.
Yeah, so I grew. I was born and raised in, you know, Fairfield County. Grew up in Fairfield County, Connecticut, and I've gone through a bit of an evolution. My youngest years, mostly the Giants, the New York Giants. However, there were times when the Rams and the Vikings, because of, you know, who the purple people eater were, you know, you get sucked into those things as a kid, but mostly the Giants. And then when, Broadway Joe Namath came along. I'm in my teenage years, young teenage years, and we're moving into the New York Jets. My dad had always been a Patriots fan from the time that the Patriots existed. And I think he did it mostly to aggravate the rest of the family, who were all Jets and Giants fans. But this, what sealed it for me was when I married my wife, Kelly, 25 years ago, and I married into a Patriots-Boston Red Sox family on the other side of the state. So I've been a Patriots fan for the last at least 25 years.
You know, Mario, just for, because of who our listeners or viewers are, in my past, I spent an awful lot of time with a man named John Hadel, who was the NFL, the quarterback for the Chargers for years. The distinction of being the NFL All-Pro the most times without having been elected into their Hall of Fame for one reason or another. That's sad. I want to say it was 9 times he was an All-Pro, maybe even 13. But one of his best friends was Joe Namath. Mm-hmm. So I got to hear story after story about these were the two best quarterbacks in the league at that time. And they would go out the night before a game, kind of back like the old Babe Ruth stories and stuff that you always just wondered about. And the game's changed and evolved. Back then, you were just so gifted and skilled that – you know, like the Babe Ruths of the world, you just show up and play and forth. He had to go to bed on time and, you know, dot every I and cross every T just to be able to get on the field.
Yep.
Mario, so, you met Fran Tarkenton at one point too?
Well, I met Fran Tarkenton and Joe Namath. So Fran Tarkenton was when I was a kid growing up in Fairfield. One summer, and I don't know what the deal was, I was probably 10 years old, the Giants were practicing during the summer at Fairfield University. They were using the Fairfield University facilities. And so my buddies and I, you know, all went up there and watched them practice and, in fact, had a whole bunch of autographs, which I'm not sure where they are, but, you know, got to meet the, you know, those folks and all. And then much later, actually, when I was at the Justice Department, I was at a big ball for a particular child abuse, you know, focused program. And Joe Namath was one of the speakers there. So I got to meet him and actually take a picture with him later on. So I met my two of my childhood favorite quarterbacks at either ends of my lifetime.
Wow.
Very cool. Hey, Mario, for our audience who may not know about your title, what is a provost and what does a provost do?
So the provost is the academic vice president. So we have a vice president over finances. We have a vice president over enrollment and, you know, human resources and the different areas that you might expect. You talked about the charger, you know, the ball, scholarship ball. That's the run by the vice president for advancement and development. And so the main focus of a university, of course, other than athletics, which is the number one thing that we do, the main focus of a university is academics. So I'm the academic vice president for the university. What's interesting about the word provost, which I'm not sure exactly how this developed, but if you go back into the history of it, the word actually means jailer or sheriff. And in fact, if you've ever seen Les Miserables, Javert, the dark character who's the guy is chasing Jean Valjean through the whole play, he's actually the provost. So I don't know what the deal is, but you know, I am essentially the jailer or the sheriff for the university, but it is more technically the vice president for academic affairs.
Classic.
Nothing wrong with being the sheriff, right? You know, nothing wrong with that at all. Hey, Mario, certainly the biggest topic, and Dr. Zinoff talked about it quite a bit, obviously since March, is, you know, how are we doing with regard to the coronavirus and reopening campus? This is our third week now of classes. How are things going on campus?
I think things are going really quite well. You know, we always are a little cautious not to jinx ourselves because there's so much uncertainty and we're really, you know, charting new waters every single day. But I know that President Kaplan and myself and, you know, all of the administration and all of the faculty and staff are so proud of what our students have been doing. I can tell you that the level of compliance has been outstanding. As of today, checking the dashboard, we still have zero cases on the campus, and there are no cases at all, active cases with our commuters as well. We are, I think, a standout institution, not only in the performance, you know, that outcome that we have right now, but the process and what the students and the staff and everyone are doing to keep us complying with the rules. If anybody was in my office, I don't know what I did with my mask. If anybody had walks through those doors, my mask is going to go on, you know, we're following the rules, and we couldn't be prouder, in particular, of our students. I mean, every day you wake up and there's another handful or more of universities that are closing, going fully online, sending their students home, and we are absolutely dedicated to not having that happen here, unless, you know, the government tells us it has to happen. So that part of it, the health and safety part, really astounding. The other part of it is, you know, we've obviously had to adapt to the circumstances. We have some fully on-ground classes. We've got a large number of hybrid classes, and we've got a significant number of fully online classes. And that transition has taken a lot of effort on the part of staff. It's been a terrific focus of our faculty for the entire summer. Many of you know, especially if you're a student, we have moved over from the Blackboard system to the Canvas system, which I'm getting a lot of really good reports from students that they really like the system, but it was a learning process for everyone. So other than a few hitches and glitches here and there, and whether there was a whiteboard in a room or not, or whether the computer turned on the right way, you know, but we worked a lot of those bugs out over the first couple of weeks here, and I think we're in really, really good shape. So on the two most important things, number one, health and safety for everyone on this campus community, A+. And I think we're right in the A range on how we transferred everything over into the new online world of our Canvas system. And so once again, I want to thank everybody who might have been involved in that, students, staff, and others, for really being major contributors to where we are right now.
Mario, let me throw this at you. I've had other people at other schools and from other communities amazed at our early success. Again, knock on wood.
Exactly.
And I'm playing right into your hand here because of the school you come from, the college you come from, the place where you were a faculty member and the dean. There's something about the students who come to UNH, and we talk about on this show a lot, the overachievers, the first generationers, the second chancers. There's just something about the grit of these young people and our faculty and staff that collectively, I feel like very disciplined. There may be and some other young people. And, you know, I'm hearing from our own student athletes, you know, it's, you walk across this campus and it's masks are on, socially distanced. They're just doing the right things.
Yeah.
As I said, it's great. Really proud of them. But don't you think it has something to do with the type of young person that comes here?
So absolutely. This is my 26th year at the University of New Haven. I started 25 years ago as a faculty member, became the chair of the Criminal Justice Department, dean of the college, and then President Kaplan last year asked me to step in as interim provost for a period of time. So I've been here for a quarter of a century, more than a quarter of a century, as we go into our 100th anniversary. And I've always felt that way. From when I started teaching here and we were predominantly a commuter campus and didn't really have much in the way of residence halls to what has happened over the last 25 years, the students have always been truly remarkable. Even though the type of student has changed, you know, the average age and what their circumstances were, you know, over 25 years, you know, you're going to see changes in the overall profile of our students. They've always been very special. They've always been very real. You know, they're a fun-loving bunch, and I know you all know that in athletics, but at the same point in time, they are serious about when there's a task that has to be done or something that has to be mastered, they're going to get it done. And that's really great because there is something special, you know, about this group of students, and there always has been. Yeah. And I've taught thousands. I was in the classroom for at least 15 years before I moved over to administration. And so, you know, literally thousands of students, I've had them in the classroom or advised them or have had other interactions with them. And they're a special group and they always have been.
Agreed. I agree with you 100%. I see it from my students as well in my classes. Mario, you mentioned you've been here for a while. How did you end up at the University of New Haven? Tell us about your path to West Haven.
Well, I'm going to tell you a little bit of a history, because my connection with the University of New Haven to this place and this building that I'm in, which is Maxey Hall, actually goes back to before the beginning of the University of New Haven. So very long story short, my great-grandmother immigrated over here from Italy. When she was a young woman here with, her children, young children, her husband died. She worked in the laundromat at Yale University, ironing the shirts of the Yale University professors about 100 years ago, which was part of the deal. I guess if you were a professor, they had a laundry and you got your shirts ironed as part of the deal. So in any event, her husband died. And at that point in time, she had 6 children. And this building that I'm in was the county receiving home, which was for orphans or other children who were displaced. And until she got herself back on her feet, and 5 of the children stayed here. My great aunt, who's 101 years old and still lives in Bridgeport, Connecticut, was too young to come here. So she kept her infant child, and the other kids were here. One of those kids was my grandmother. And so when I told her I got a job at the University of New Haven, 25 years ago, she said, "Is that the building that's up on the hill in West Haven?" And I said, "Yes, it is." And that was the first time she told me the story about how she and her siblings lived here in the county receiving home in between my grandmother's first and second of 3 husbands. She was a tough lady, buried 3 husbands. But the point is, in between husband number 1 and number 2, the kids lived here, including my grandmother. So this hallway that I walked down could have been walked down by my grandmother, this would have been probably the late 20s or something like that. So it's an interesting place to be here, and I think about that. So I came here because I'm from Connecticut. I'd gone down to Washington, D.C., got my law degree from Georgetown, got a job working for the Department of Justice at that point in time. But I wanted to come back to Connecticut, and I did, and I came back. I practiced law, and I got a call out of the blue from the dean of the original school that became the College of Criminal Justice. This dean had been hired the year before to build up what is now the Henry Lee College. And coincidentally, we had a mutual friend who was an appellate court judge out in California, which is where that dean had come from. And he called me up out of the blue and he said, "I'm told by Justice Nicholson that I need to know you and you need to come and teach for me at the University of New Haven." And so I did. And so it was a happenstance phone call from someone who I didn't know. And I wasn't even, to be honest with you, I wasn't even sure there was a University of New Haven, to be honest with you, at that time. I'd never heard of it 25 years ago. I was a UConn undergrad. So that's how I ended up here. And it's been absolutely terrific. I decided that academia was what I wanted to do, other than government service or law practice, which were the two other main things that I had done. And it's been an enjoyable quarter of a century.
Mario, that's kind of a showstopper. I don't know that we're ever going to hear a story like that on this show. I mean,
it's something. It's really something. I'm reminding of it every day.
I don't even have words for that one.
This might be a story that could potentially top that. Before we came on the air, Mario was chatting with us about his family history. Yeah. Mario, please tell us about you have a unique connection to UNH, as you just told us that story. Please tell us your family's unique history to Canada.
So you heard about my mother's side of the family, which is the immigration from Italy around the turn of the last century, not the recent one. Prior to that, the Gabory family, which is the French-Canadian name from my father's side, they had moved down from Canada into Rhode Island and then ultimately in Connecticut. So as we started looking at our family history and we went back to, the 16 and 1700s where the early Gabory family moved from France to Canada, my ancestors basically settled or were part of the settling of Manitoba, Canada. I'm losing track of some of the great greats, but my grandmother was Marie Anne Gabory, and one of her children was Louis Real, and I'm told that Louis Real is actually they have Louis Real Day in Manitoba. He's some kind of a big name up there, and part of the history was he was basically advocating for the indigenous Indian people of Canada at a time when the government was not doing the right thing up there, and the Canadian government actually hung my ancestor for treason, for basically having sponsored insurrection by the indigenous people against Canada. So subsequently, the government of Canada exonerated him. It was a little too late to do anything about the execution, of course, but his name was cleared, and they basically apologized for the wrongdoing, both against him as well as against the indigenous peoples of Canada. So I'm told that if you go up to that part of Canada, you know, Gabri is like, you know, half the phone book. So I'll have to get my family up there for a trip someday, because I've been to Canada a few times, but never to Manitoba.
That one may top the, I'm not sure which stories.
But as I said to you all when I was in the green room, people who know me have no problem believing that one of my ancestors was hung for treason. But he was exonerated, as I will be someday.
I can't believe you have not been up to Manitoba.
Yeah, no, I know. It is kind of weird, isn't it? We're going to make a point of it. My wife and I have actually talked about it. I do have to tell you that I didn't know anything about this history until very recently, when a distant cousin had contacted me, who we didn't even know existed. The Gabri family spread out, and unlike the Italian family, which is very close, the French-Canadian family kind of goes off in its own little nuclear pods. But he contacted me because he was trying to put back together some of the history, write a book about the family, get old family pictures and like that. And he was more than an amateur genealogist. He actually retired from his job in the computer industry and became a genealogist. And so now he's got this, I've got a ring binder of the entire history of the Gabri family, which is where I get this information from.
So while they're on my mind, I may lose some of these thoughts or questions. What was your the surname of your Italian side of the family?
So my mother's maiden name was Varelli.
Okay.
And my great grandmother's name was Fioravanti before she married.
So I've learned since I moved here, it's fascinating. In the first conversation you have with anyone that's in a social context will ask you where you're from, mm-hmm. what your background is. And people just love to know what you are. And coming from the Midwest and being a complete, you know, mix of a bunch of different things, they're trying to put you in a category somewhere, and it's hard to get. I mean, a lot of Irish, Italians, et cetera. Now I got to ask the next best question.
Well, first of all, they're asking you that because they want to know if you can cook.
That's okay. So you read my mind.
Oh, I did. Okay, because they want to know if they want to get invited over for dinner or not.
Exactly. So which side of the family, the Italians or the French, have the best cuisine in your family?
Well, you know, I grew up with the Italian side, and so culturally, I'm probably more Italian, having grown up that way. And so I'm not sure I can give a valid answer to that, but my imprecise answer is going to be the Italian side of the family.
It's hard to beat Italian food. I mean, I just don't know. Yeah, and I like all food, but yeah, that's, you just can't. That's
right.
The crown jewel of all, you know. And heck, I'll go out here and eat good Mexican food or Indian food right down the street and love every bit of it. But living in Italian country has kind of been one of my favorite things the last year.
Yeah, and the French are no slouches when it comes to food either. But you know, there's something rustic about the way the Italians do it.
Okay, next question, and then I'll send it back to our point guard, JW. So of all the conversations we've had, I've never asked you this. You have two terminal degrees, a J and a PhD. What order did they come in, and what prompted that? I don't know many people who have both. I know a few, but not many.
So we actually have a few on campus. It's not the most common thing, but the idea of more than one terminal degree is – you know, it does happen, particularly in academia. So I got my PhD first. My PhD is from Penn State, and a great place to go. In fact, one of the things I'll tell you, I graduated from UConn. University of Maryland is my master's. Penn State's my PhD, and Georgetown is my law degree. And when I graduate, the year I graduated from each one of those institutions, one of their teams won the national championship in one of their areas. So I've always thought I should just rent myself out as someone who can go to a college that's really hoping for a national championship, and they'll win. If they give me a degree, they're going to win some national championship. But in any event, I went to Penn State. My background is essentially in child psychology, developmental psychology. It's a program called Human Development and Family Studies at Penn State, very well known. And my doctoral dissertation was on the item, topic of child abuse, which is how I got into the whole crime victims area. And after I had gotten close to the end of the PhD, I decided I was very interested in the legal policy side, as opposed to just either the clinical side or the research side. And I decided that I wanted to get the law degree. And so I applied around and got into Georgetown, and I like DC, and it was a nice opportunity. So there's a lot of details I don't have to give you, but I will tell you, when I was at UConn, this is how different the world was. I graduated in 1978. So probably in 1977 or so, we had to take the GREs to get into graduate school, and still the LSATs to go into law school. And so I took both of them, but the stories were very different. So I actually prepared for the GREs, and I did okay. Got into graduate school, did okay. The LSAT was a little bit different, and it'll shock people who want to do these kinds of tests now, but my roommate and I were, my roommate was scheduled to take them. We got up that morning and he goes, "Why don't you come and take the LSATs with me?" And you could register on site. Those were the days you could just show up and register on site. So I said, "What the heck?" You know, so I went and I took the LSAT. Well, let me tell all the students out there that taking preparatory measures before a standardized test is a really good idea, because I completely bombed the LSAT the first time I took it, did well in the GREs, and I thought, okay, graduate school is my route, not law school. So I had contemplated law school somewhat, even in the earlier days. And then I was smart enough when I was in the PhD program to take a prep course and did better. But I took them in that order because my thoughts about what kind of an impact I wanted to have evolved. And I ended up working for the Justice Department for a number of years and did some other things down in DC related to this, where advocating for crime victims' rights, and in fact, at the Justice Department, helped establish the federal crime victim witness programs and things like that that people know about now, but were very, very much in their beginning stages back in that, this is the early and mid 1980s.
Wow. Long path, I'm sure.
I know, it always looks so, You all know this. It always looks like so well thought out when you're looking back from here to there. But, if you had asked me in 1978 if I thought I'd be a provost of a university, or asked any of my professors if they thought I would be a professor, they would have said no. And I would have said no, too. So it is interesting, that retrospective look at things.
You know, Mario, I think J. Dub and I've talked about this, and I certainly talk about it when I speak to young people all the time. Sounds like you do too. Sometimes they get overwhelmed when someone tells their life story and they go home and think, oh, well, he or she has all the answers he got from point A to point Z. No, it's a zigzag. It's not a straight line.
Absolutely.
Life works. And there's some, you prepare, you take opportunity. But there's some fate and luck and
absolutely
guidance in there.
There's no straight lines.
No.
In fact, growing up, my grandparents had a cottage on Fairfield Beach Road, and we spent a lot of summers there, and I learned how to sail. And the first thing you learn about sailing is, tacking. That most of the time you don't have a wind behind you that's helping you out. Most of the time, where you want to get to, you're fighting headwinds. And the whole idea is to tack, as you talk about that zigzag to get there. It's a very important concept to get, especially as a young person, that there are very few straight lines in life, and that there's going to be a lot of zigzagging, adapting, coping, dealing with it, dusting yourself off, wipe a little dirt in it, walk it off. And then, you get that in sports, you get that in academia, you get that in life. It's all about resilience and, and moving to the next thing. I wish I could remember some of the great quotes that you know, I've heard over the years, but one of them, and I can't remember exactly who it was, but it was something along the lines of success is learning how to go from failure to failure to failure without losing your enthusiasm. And then ultimately you're going to reach success, you know, and that's what a lot of this is.
That's wow. Ted, Rob, we need that on tape for your career development folks this week. I'm sure you can use that Rob in the green room that nobody can see.
This is awesome advice for our students. This is along the lines of Dr. Z, what your dad said, right? Life's not a straight. Oh, yeah. What's his favorite quote?
Well, he had a bunch, but his was like, your life's a rat. You're a rat in a maze. That you bump your head on the wall, and you know, you turn, go the other direction, bump your head on the wall. You keep doing it to eventually, you know, fall out the other side, and it whatever your success point is.
Yep. You also try to pick up a piece of cheese along the way if you can.
Exactly.
Yeah, life is certainly not a straight line, and for us as individuals, I would imagine for our university, it's been the same way, right? I mean, we've grown a lot in 100 years. Mario, you're also our chief strategy officer. So we know what the last 100 years look like. They've not been a straight line. What do the next 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years look like? Is that a straight line, or is that going to be zigzagging and tacking?
I mean, I think it's inevitable that the same dynamic and the same vectors that are going to move us, you know, from one direction to another, and then you try to, you know, stabilize and move back. The idea about the strategic planning is to, you know, be as intentional as possible, minimize the, you know, the fits and the starts, you know, anticipate the disruptions, which we can anticipate, and sort of be prepared for them. But there's nothing that you can do that will tell, I mean, if we were doing this last fall, would any of you have said, hey, listen, let's get ready for that pandemic that's going to come in March, you know, and you're all going to be off campus for probably a year. What do you think? You know, it wasn't even on our radar screen. And so we have no idea what to anticipate, but the pandemic and these great earth shattering things are few and far between, but you can kind of peek around the corner. You take a look at the trends, you know, the mega trends and the other trends that are out there, what's coming, and you try to anticipate that. So while I want to make sure that we're on as straight a path as we can, we're going to adapt to circumstances. We all know, and this President Kaplan on down through all of us who've had these conversations, higher education is never going to be the same. It should have been evolving anyway, and we were evolving. We were already trying to stay ahead of the curve in a lot of different ways. But I think what the pandemic has done, and this is what a lot of disruption does, if you manage it the right way, is it gets you to hit that reset button. It gets you to think about things in a different way. It gets you to open up your mind to possibilities that you wouldn't even have thought about before. We'll always be the University of New Haven. I know President Kaplan feels this strongly, and so do I. We will always have a residential campus. You know, we're going to be back on all the sports fields. I'm looking forward to the Charger Classic golf tournament last year. I was real upset that we didn't have the golf tournament. Can't tell you how many of those golf tournaments I've done to raise money for athletics. It's a terrific event. We're going to get back. Football starting tonight. I mean, we're going to get back and have that. But in addition to that, there's a whole new thought process about higher education, how it is that we should be thinking about our courses, delivering them, how we can best serve our students, how we can get away from some of the old thinking about how a class is accredited, and move more, in my view, into competency-based and skill acquisition. You know, and it's not that there won't be lectures, and it's not that we won't have knowledge acquisition. That's going to be a part of it, but it's kind of taking it from proving that someone learned something to now being able to show that they can do something with what they learned. And then the next step is, what's the impact on the world of what they learned, and then what they could do with what they learned. So we're trying to take it each step out, starting with the best classroom environment, whether it's virtual or in person, or a combination of those two, making sure we're paying attention to our students, how they want to learn, what they want to learn, and then making sure that we're thinking about the skills and competencies that are going to be required in the real world, whether it's business, industry, nonprofit sector, government sector, whatever it is, entrepreneurial work that the students might want to do in forming their own companies, whatever it is that they want to do, what are the skills and competencies that are going to be required, and figure out how to back that into our curriculum so that we can do that. And then a small part of that is more things that are modularized. So you could get a badge or a certificate or a another kind of a micro-credential that you can build and stack up into the bigger degree programs and like that, or not, as you see fit. So it's a you know, it's a real sea change for higher education, what's going on now, and we want to stay ahead of it. We want it to be a sea change that we kind of ride the crest to where things are going to be and not have it be a tsunami that I think is going to actually overtake others in higher education who are not taking it as seriously as we are, frankly.
You know, what Mario just said there, J-Dub, is the very thing that I get to be on cabinet. Not every AD gets to be. And this is the stuff that I love. You know, sometimes in cabinet, there's a room for me to speak to an issue or not. But regardless, I love being a part of these conversations. And it's, I think it's important in my role to be a part of these conversations so I can know the direction the institution's going, and we as an athletic department can morph that way. But just individually, this is, I grew up around this, and Mario is dead on. I do believe the University of New Haven's ahead of the curve because of him and President Kaplan and the forward kind of thinking. And Mario and I have had these conversations as well. He has a daughter that's in college. I have children in college. And the very thing he's talking about, my daughter asks about. She's getting two majors. She wants a minor. She wants these modular certifications, you know, one in a foreign language that she's fluent in, but it just didn't line up the right way at the school she goes to. And like, Abby, don't worry about it. I don't have to pay money for you to, you know, but if the school would provide these, she would be checking them off right and left, you know.
Right. Yeah, we're going to be rolling out some really cool initiatives. I believe that you might have, some alums who tune into this broadcast, whatever this is. I'm not even sure technically what I'm doing. I think it's a podcast. The point is,
we don't even know what we're doing, Mario. So don't worry about it.
You're on Good Morning America. Did you not know that?
Yeah. I have my Einstein quote over there. If we knew what we were doing, we wouldn't call it research. Was one of his famous sayings. But in any event, we're going to be reaching out to our alums. So these things will not only be available as we roll them out to our current students. And right now, you might know that we went from almost zero to 90 different articulated dual degree programs, where you go from a bachelor's into a master's program. And we have 90 students this year, the first year we've rolled them out in an intentional way, 90 dual degree programs, 207 students that are registered in one of the dual degree programs, which is another way of compressing into a smaller period of time the knowledge, competency, and skill acquisition and degree acquisition. And so we're going to be rolling these out not only for our current students, but we're going to be looking for our alums, maybe students that did not finish their degrees, and look at ways in which we might be able to develop degree completion programs. And that would be potentially online, I would say, for people who've now, they've got jobs and families and it's not as convenient for them to come back to the main campus. So we're going to be looking at an amazing array of alternatives for all of our community who, you know, past, present, future, to get engaged with the different things that we're going to be able to do moving forward.
Wow, that's a lot of good stuff. That's exciting, Mario. And that's stuff that, you know, I sit in a lot of these meetings with you, and the way you just summarized it and synthesized it was really good for me to even understand better. But those students who are listening, alumni, I hope they take full advantage of it.
Yep, absolutely.
Mario, I know we're running out of time here. We appreciate you being with us. Final thoughts for our audience. Any parting words of wisdom for our students, our student athletes, prospective students, and parents and alumni?
So, you know, I'm not sure I've got a lot of wisdom. I'm going to keep it real basic. We are going to get through this thing. Hang in there. Just focus on keeping yourselves and the people around you healthy. If you're here at the university, you know, as a student, focus on your education. If you're having any issues, do not hesitate to reach out. You have your faculty members, you have your advisors, you have the chair of your department or the dean of your college. You can contact me directly. You have the Student Success Center and the different advising groups that we have. We're all a bit disoriented about what's going on. So if you're one of our, I want to speak mostly to the students right now. You know, if you're one of our students, if you're feeling like things are not the way they should be, you are 100% right. We're making them as close to the way they should be as possible. And we're all going to have these little hiccups and, you know, steps along the way that are not going to be quite right. Reach out. Reach out to a trusted member of the staff. Athletic staff could put you in touch with somebody in academics and vice versa. But just hang in there. And the most important thing is keep yourself healthy, and we're going to get through this together. That's my wisdom.
I think that's great wisdom for all of us. That's Mario Gabbri, our interim provost and our senior VP of academic affairs here at the University of New Haven. Mario, thanks for joining us here on the Dr. Z and J Dub podcast.
You're welcome. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, good stuff. Thank you, Mario.
You got it. Bye-bye now.
See ya.
As we say goodbye to Mario, I want to let all of our alums know that the Centennial Ball coming up a little less than a month from now, first weekend of October, Saturday, October the 3rd, we want to encourage all of our alumni to register. Costs very reasonable this year, just $25 per person. It promises to be a memorable evening of student showcases, entertainment, and a live auction. More details to be released soon here on the podcast and on our website. Your support through the Centennial Ball will help us get closer to meeting and hopefully even succeeding our ambitious $120 million Charger Challenge goal, which is part of the overall campaign for the University of New Haven. For more information or how to register for the Centennial Ball, please go to the website, newhaven.edu/alumni. Dr. Z, your thoughts on Mario? It's the first time I've had a chance to meet with him. You've known him. You know him quite well, being here a little more than a year. Your thoughts on what he said today?
Well, he's one of the first people I met when I came here, and we went to a great restaurant down here called Shell and Bones, and thankfully he paid. Take out a loan before you go there. That's fantastic place. Had a great conversation, connected on so many philosophies and values and points. To the viewers, I'd say, you know, when people ask why I like UNH so much, he's an example of that. He's, you know, behind the president, the next lead member of our cabinet. And that's who I get to work with. You know, you've met other members of our cabinet, just fantastic people. He just exemplifies in so many ways the faculty, staff, administration here at the University of New Haven. So if anything, I just hold him up as an example of the great people I get to work with and our students get to be around. You know, I could talk to Mario all day. He can converse about so many different topics and segue so easily in and amongst those topics. And then finally, I would point out that, you know, his vision for this institution, along with President Kaplan, is so cutting edge, and really proud to be a part of a place like this, that we're moving in directions other schools haven't even thought about. And that's one reason we're ahead of the curve from March 9th to now, ahead of so many other institutions.
We are fortunate to have leaders like Mario and President Kaplan, no doubt about it. I want to bring out our producer, Broccoli Rob Thompson, who's joining us from Florida, because earlier, Z, you mentioned, you know, the career development aspect and what Mario was talking about with regard to career development. And obviously, Rob's handling that for our student athletes this year as part of, you know, we talk about leadership, right, with John and diversity with Robin. Rob, you know, you've known Mario for a while now as well. Your reaction to what he said, especially with his advice on career development?
I think anybody that has, you know, built their career from the foundation, you know, you are taking – I love his example of that, by the way. I think I might take that from him. That's a good one. But I always say, you know, you got to figure out what you hate doing for a career before you discover what you love to do for a career. And that may take you 6 months. That may take you 6 years or 20 years to figure that out. But you land at it on some point, and the key always is just be patient. Be patient, you know, dive into your network, build your relationships, and everything he just said is just buckle up and hold on for the ride.
You know, Rob, you and I have been talking a lot about higher education and different aspects of it that need to become more futuristic. And I felt like you and Mario had had conversations before, because you talk about your experience in the real world at ESPN and Disney. I mean, sorry, J-Dub, Disney and NFL. J-Dub's our guy. We had a lot of letters represent. You know, you've been talking about certificates and so on and so forth. And that's what Mario was just elaborating further on in the direction that UNH and higher education is moving.
You know, it's different when you come from the outside into higher ed, you know, as you kind of peel back the onion as a business. And then when you hit a massive obstacle like we all hit in this world, it's hard to big ship. You know, it's a big, powerful ship that's been moving for a very long time, you know, in one direction, you know, and it's got a lot of torque behind it. And then you gotta stop and you gotta change direction. And that's what we're trying to do. So good thing is we're smaller, we're nimbler, and we can do those things, and we're private. So we can make those things happen quicker. And when Mario kind of gives his business perspective on, we're not going to change everything, right? Yeah. But the core is the core, but we're going to start adding the things in. It's not about the content that we're teaching. It's how we deliver the content, which is so important. And that's how Amazon has taken over box stores in the world. It's not the content or the product. It's how we deliver the product. And so kudos to Mario for being the thought leader and a business leader and such a positive influence. And, you know, who knew that his family roamed the hallways of Maxi Hall? So kudos to him.
Can't forget that story. I've never heard one like that before. He works where grandma was a little kid.
Rockley Rob, as always, thanks for all you do for us on the podcast, and thanks for popping in here at the end with your unique perspective, and we'll see you next time. Yeah, I think people, if they don't know folks in academia, they have one idea of what they are, right? They think that they're sheltered in an ivory tower and they're stuffy, and Mario is none of those things, right? He is as real gets. He is a phenomenal storyteller, as we saw here on the podcast. And he does care, obviously, about the university, our students, our student athletes, their families, based on his advice. And I think that's probably the one thing that I'll take away from today's show, Z.
Yeah, it's a good takeaway.
I got to ask you before we sign off, you're going to watch football tonight. We already said that. What are you going to be eating while you're watching the game, Dr. Z?
You know, it's Luke's last night in town, and I think he said something about Zuccardi's. So, you know, I get him provisanos for lunch, Zuccardi's for dinner. We'll send him off in high fashion tonight.
That sounds like a plan. Good luck to your Chiefs, Dr. Z. Again, congratulations on him being the Super Bowl champs. So,
All right.
Forward to watching the game tonight. Our thanks to Mario Gabbari for joining us. Our thanks to our executive producer, John Mays, and our producer, Broccoli Rob Thompson. For Dr. Z, I'm J-Dub. Thanks for watching the Dr. Z and J-Dub podcast. We'll see you next time.